You're listening to Drawn to Comics, the podcast about a couple of guys that are just drawn to comics. My name's Russ.
And my name's Ken.
We're sitting in Ken's beautiful comic book store in downtown Glendale, Arizona. I couldn't help but notice some decals in the window. Best of New Times. Best of Phoenix New Times. Fifth best comic book store, travelandleisure.com. What was the other one? Eisner winner? Well, nominee.
Now, seven times, I think it was, right? Seven times?
I think seven times equals one win.
Yes,
dude. Seven nominees equals one win, I think.
Stu Heron?
Well, for what?
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out.
Best retailer or comic book store?
Yeah, it's like what they do with the Spirit of Retailing Award.
Okay.
It's given away to one comic shop per year through San Diego Comic Con.
Throughout the country?
Through the world.
Throughout the world?
Yes. Most of the times we've lost, five out of the seven times to stores that weren't even in this country.
Wow, okay.
And we lost to a store in Florida, and we lost to a store in Ohio, too, as well.
So, okay.
You know, so kind of,
and the rest, Bangladesh, right, from what I understand?
There was one in Tel Aviv.
Really? Was,
yeah, one of your calls, Comics and Vegetables. And I'm going, I don't...
Are you serious?
Yeah, it was called Comics and Vegetables, was one of the winners, one of the years.
In Tel Aviv?
Yes, I'm pretty sure it was in Tel Aviv.
Well, fortunately, I think the next day it blew up. So that's one competitor off the table.
Yeah, maybe. Who knew that these two things go together so well?
Comics and vegetables.
Let me double check. It might be like listening too much of the news rather than what's going on in comic book awards.
Well.
But I'm pretty sure it was in Tel Aviv.
Needless to say, it's just an honor to be sitting in this prestigious store, to have it in the Phoenix metropolitan area in general. Ken, Susan, his family, his employees running a great shop. And today, for our podcast, we have a guest. Mr. Andy Tucker is with us, a regular to Drawn to Comics. Ken, tell us a little bit about Andy.
Dude, Andy is one of our long-term customers since, I would say, Drawn to Comics version 2. Because we're in version 3 right now. You kind of think it's like, you know, Microsoft.
Actually, I'd say this is 4 because you transformed it twice since you moved in.
Yeah, this is like, I call 3.5.
Okay.
Because I said, too, it's like that because we did extend out into the space behind us, too, as well. But I call each more or less physical location a different version because we were started off at 5619 back in 2005, and we were there till 2007.
Okay.
Then we got the honor of having Andy walk into our 2.0 store at 5757 West Glendale when we're right next door to Subway.
Yeah, that's your pre-crisis. Now next to Subway, your post-crisis.
Yes, and now we're into our Heroes in Crisis.
This is, I think New 52 was pre-Toy Attic.
Yes,
New 52. And now
we're
Rebirth,
the Toy Attic. And now it's going to be Drawn to Comics in Crisis as Christmas comes around this year because a lot of people are concerned with the Glendale glitters down here in Glendale this year. Have you heard about this?
No, what are the concerns?
Oh my gosh. Everyone thinks not everyone. A lot of business owners are more or less started this whole little group to try to fight for our glitters because there's a few nights that are being more or less quiet nights, they're calling them in downtown Glendale. Remember we talked a little bit about that at one point?
Yeah.
Where they're going to just be, the lights will be on, but there won't be vendors in the park.
Oh, okay.
And so a lot of people that are business owners down here, not everybody, but a group of business owners are kind of concerned that that's going to scare people from coming down
here. Dissuade people from coming.
And I'm kind of going, well, dude, it's, you know, there's a positive to that, too, as well. Right. There's nothing to do in the park.
You walk around the streets, you come into these shops.
You're coming to our shops.
Yes.
Yes, so don't spend the money in the park. Spend it in our shops.
Absolutely.
So there's some resistance going between the city and these businesses that are so freaked out that these people won't show up if those vendors aren't there.
Oh, my gosh.
And so
always something, you know what?
Doesn't turn into a crisis in Glendale.
It's a matter of branding. If instead of calling those nights quiet nights, because that could dissuade somebody from coming, if you simply instead call them like brick and mortar night,
yes,
come to the shops that are here, enjoy the lights, of course.
The spirit of the lights.
Yeah.
Do you mean like we're the spirit of the lights down here?
Right.
And it's just, I think it'll be kind of over time. You don't want to take the lights out of here altogether. I mean, obviously, Glendale Glitter is an important part of Glendale, but if they could refocus that long term onto the businesses down here, we're all going to thrive more because people know that we're here all year long. And if they're not walking in our shops because they're walking into those vendors and seeing all the fun stuff going on in the park, which is kind of cool, you want to get them walking inside of our shops more than in the park.
Yeah.
Agreed.
But back to Andy, who's the main focus here.
Actually, before we talk about and talk to Andy, I just want to confirm that Ken showed me on his phone Comics and Vegetables is a real comic book store.
Yes, I didn't believe when they won.
This is Rihanna? How do you pronounce that?
Rihanna, Israel? So I guess it's not Tel Aviv,
it's a town.
Is that near Tel Aviv, Israel?
Come on. I don't know.
I don't. I'm
I couldn't tell you how many miles surprise is from here.
Exactly. Dude.
But it's funny that
not my as coincidence point. Would have it, I've got a third world atlas right here.
Exactly. Dude.
I got a Tomas guide right here. I don't know, but Hamas guide.
Yeah, there we go. Hamas guide. There you go. that's too funny.
It's funny though when you look at their Google reviews. You know, there's the question answer section for businesses. The first question is, "Do you have Rick and Morty beanbags?" The second question is, do you have celery? No, I don't
hate sand. I can guarantee you they're made with sand.
Oh, jeez.
That's a lot of sand in that area of the world, right? No. That's a commodity. It's like water in Canada. I'm not trying to insult the people.
Of course not.
All these filled with sand over there.
Of course. Yeah, so how are they going to sell the bags there?
What?
Then how are they going to sell the bags there?
It's for making Rick and Morty toys. It's not for selling sand. Oh, you're making like, you know, we use beans. Made of plastic that's like totally artificially manufactured. These are nature's earth.
I'm sorry. Practically, a sandbag would be absolutely positively uncuddly and unfunctional in a house.
It's like a farm to table toy.
Sandbags, dude. They keep you from flooding too. You could put them by your door.
There you go.
For those major rains, that, like it's kind of like Phoenix. You know what I mean?
Sure.
I kind of think we should have a lot more in common with that side of the world than we think.
With the third world. Yes. Right, you're right.
Exactly. Like geographic, go take a picture and pound that mountain, you can say you're in Israel.
Oh, my God.
It's like that, you know, the Camelback Mountain, the people ride on camelbacks
I'm still reeling from that Hamas guide.
Hamas guide.
That's classic. I'm going to make a joke out of that somehow. Yeah. Somewhere.
There you go.
Well, before we become reporters that are kidnapped and taken away, never seen again, we should probably get back to that.
I'm just a visitor to this. I'm not a party to what's
Andy's
going on.
Like, I by no means endorse the content.
Do not go into an embassy there if you say something bad about the community there. Luckily, I'm in a free country over here.
And, Andy Tucker's here, ladies. Yes.
We went way off the wheels. Let's get the wheels back on.
Regular customer at Drawn to Comics, and he has some interesting insight and stories connected to the comic book industry and comic book culture that we wanted to talk to him about. I wanted to ask him first because, Andy, you're an art teacher here in the Valley, and we were talking about this before we started the podcast, but I'm just curious if there really is kind of a crisis in art education. I hear it from friends all the time that teach that extracurricular activities like art, PE, these things are at risk because of budget. And since you're a teacher and we're talking about comics, which are, of course, art, I thought, well, the first good question would be, is this true? And what can people do if they're genuinely concerned to kind of give back and help local art programs?
The short answer is that it is true. However, one of the things that I really and truly feel like I need to say here is that one of the reasons why special areas in general have the problems that they have is because it fits too many political agendas. That's what happens to special area, just to teachers in general. When money has been railroaded many times, it was supposed to be for teachers over the past 15 years here in Arizona, and it never got any coverage on any of the networks, not on CNN and not on the almighty Fox. And I stopped to wonder why that is. And it's because saving that money and not spending it on public education fits the agendas of too many people on both sides of the political argument.
Oh, wow.
And all I'm going to say is that it's not the things that separate Republicans and Democrats that I'm worried about. It's the things that they share. The sort of some of the things that they share, that they agree upon, are things like you should get paid more money to handle garbage than to handle children. I could double my income right now by being a garbage man if I wanted to. And I'm not in any way disparaging what those people do. I'm just saying that I think our children are more important and should be given a priority.
It's like I think they're too focused on budgets, which is sad. That they look at how much money is in front of them at that moment, mm-hmm. rather than how much money is being pumped into the economy by the importance of educating the youth of the future. And that's very frustrating to see, because the education of kids today, in my opinion, is such a low priority. Mm-hmm. I don't quite understand how they continue to think this country is going to thrive if you're not putting focus on education. Secondary education is a completely different ballgame. I don't quite understand, other than the fact that universities get to charge for that education.
Sure.
But the public school systems, which get people ready for that secondary education, which will make those colleges more money if those kids are ready to go.
Right.
You think it would be a trickle-down effect.
Well,
they just don't seem to put that connection together, and I don't understand what that is. Maybe you can put more enlightenment to me on that, because my dad was a high school counselor. He dealt every day with trying to make sure that kids get their future on the right path.
Sure.
So I can kind of relate to this. Even though I'm not a teacher, I have a huge passion for how important education is to this country. But it seems to be lost in the translation. I don't know what that translation loss is. Maybe you can explain more to me why this country doesn't put such a high priority on education.
Well, it comes back to what I said. My primary idea about that is that it fills too many political agendas not to spend all that money on education. Public schools are one of the largest draws on every state's budget.
Do you feel it's – I do feel it's an Arizona problem more than a lot of other states too.
Of course it's an Arizona problem more. Arizona, even after this quote-unquote big raise that we were supposed to get last year, which – did not come through the way anybody thinks it does. Everybody thinks it was a 20% raise, and that is absolutely not true.
Yes.
Lots of school districts gave a 4% raise to some of their employees, a 10% raise to others. I got a 6% raise based on what I would have made last year if I had stayed. If I was already at the school that I'm at this year, I would have gotten maybe a 6% raise. And everybody else in the country thinks that they got 20% raises, that they got a 10% this year and they're getting a 10% next year. But let me let you in on a little secret. If we had gotten a 20% raise, we still would have been below the regional average for states and what they pay their teachers. Arizona would be. We're still right scratching right near by the bottom.
Is there any reason why that Arizona does not want to put a focus on education?
Well, the simple answer is the more money you give schools, the less money politicians make annually. It's their profit margin.
And there's
the more money you give to public schools, the less money you get to subsidize the burgeoning charter school industry in this state, which eventually is going to take care of itself. It's going to be a for profit. They're going to get the money that they need. And as a result, they're putting that money in now so that the public schools can sort of slowly fold up.
Wow. Now, I don't quite understand the difference between a private school, a charter school, and a public school.
Okay.
Private school is completely 100% funded by the students. This charter school plan here feels like a private school type of system, but they're leaching off the public school
But what happens?
I shouldn't say leeching. I apologize. Does that mean some charter schools are great?
The charter school
kind of feels like a scam to me when I think about charter schools.
The charter school gets their extra cards in their hand from investors who are shareholders, stockholders,
and even
business owners.
Yes.
Who know that they're going to get a certain amount of money from the government to run their schools.
Okay.
And the rest of the money is money that they're going to get by making inroads with companies that provide them with 100% free cutting edge computer technology as long as everything is almost like an ad for those products to the kids.
It's almost like lobbyists of education.
Yeah. And unfortunately...
Wow.
Unfortunately,
that's a very interesting point to put in. It sounds like lobbying.
Yeah, unfortunately, one of the things that I can tell you as somebody who spent a lot of time in the public school and a small amount of time in the charter school is that there's also very political. There's a very political end to what the kids are exposed to.
Wow, that makes
when I was in Glendale, I remember this conversation. I couldn't be prouder of how I handled this one instance. I voted. And I came in with a little sticker on my badge that day that said, I voted. And a bunch of kids said, who'd you vote for, Tucker? And I said, that's my business and it's not yours. And one kid said, you voted for Trump, right? Obviously, because if you voted for Hillary, you'd tell us exactly that you voted for because you'd have nothing to be ashamed of. And da, 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 da. And I said, no, that's not why I wouldn't tell you. I wouldn't tell you because I am your public school teacher. And who I voted for is my personal business. If I tell you who I voted for, someone will ask me my reasons for making that vote. And when I start sharing my political opinions with you, I am now influencing your political bent. And that's not my job. Yep. That's not why I'm here. I would much rather show you how I think people are supposed to act.
Yep.
And then you get into the world and vote for someone I would never vote for because you have the freedom to do so, and that's what I want to protect. Mm-hmm. And that is what you get in public school. And this is something that people don't seem to understand. is that, and the people who do, sometimes they don't like that because they really think that we should be pushing one way or another over another. It's, and I refuse to do it.
Freedom of religion, speech, and politics.
Yeah, I just refuse to do it.
Yes.
And that's one of the last bastions of truth in the public school that will be a dying breed in the charter school.
I hate to say
and
it.
And in the private school.
That's unfortunately, I don't want to sound like I'm maliciousness towards charter schools, but we had a personal experience like that with our own daughter when she was in first grade, where the teacher was trying to enforce political view on a first grader. Oh, wow. And it was during the Obama and, John McCain election.
Yeah. Yeah.
And this teacher, she had an election poster in her room and she folded the Obama side on the back of the McCain side. She couldn't even see Obama.
Oh, interesting.
And she was telling the students that Obama was evil. And I'm going, you're telling us the first graders. Are you freaking kidding me, dude?
Sure.
Yeah. Why don't you hurry up and get fired is what I would say.
They don't even start talking about politics or history or ethics until like your fourth or fifth grade.
Right.
And she's doing this to first graders.
That's wild.
And we're going like that. You got to be freaking kidding me. And like that. She only went there for first grade. She went back to public school, second grade.
Sure.
And
sure.
We were the charter school education so much better is why we gave it a try.
Yeah.
But when I saw that, I said, Suze, we're not going to put up with this crap.
Yeah.
That's like, that is not how students should be taught at such a young age, much less no matter what grade they're in. Mm-hmm. And starting in first grade, I mean,
and if she just put the poster up whole.
Yes.
Everything might have been different.
And she stood by what she was doing. Do you know what I mean? And I'm kind of going, I couldn't believe it. I've never seen anything like that in education system.
Wow. Well, when it comes to the arts, Sandy, you're an art teacher.
Apologies. We get so passionate. That's okay.
I'm talking the same way. I hear what you're saying.
When it comes to the arts, people that are concerned about budgets and the funding and seeing some of these programs go away, what can the average person do? I mean, mm-hmm. I don't have a kid in school, so I want kids to keep learning about art. So what would I be able to do?
I'm really not an administrator. I don't claim to understand what it's like to be an administrator. What I will tell you is this. I am where the rubber meets the road, and I have spent thousands and thousands of my own dollars on supplies for my students. And I think that get involved with your PTO.
That's coming out of your own pocket, thousands of dollars you spent on the students for them?
Over the years of my career.
And there's no reimbursement from?
You can get about $300 back from the U.S. government every year. Okay. But I spend over $700 of my own dollars every year on supplies.
And you can't write that off in your taxes to get that back.
I can write off a $300 worth of it. Or $200, depending on what year it is.
Wow. And does the principal more encourage you to do that? Or it's like more like, hey, dude, like, do you go to the principal and say, I need this for my classroom?
I've not been encouraged. It's more like the system has muscled me into it. When I remember more than one year I came to school and I said, hey, boss, what's my budget look like this year?
Okay.
And they say, Tucker, you're our budget.
Wow.
You're here. And
part of your salary that you should expect.
He said, if you don't have the money to put in, then I suggest that you repurpose. So I got really creative and did a lot of, repurposing of materials, and it worked out well.
So change your academic.
It was actually a very teachable cornerstone for our kids that you just don't throw it away. Waste not, want not. There's something can be done with this that you might just wind up loving.
Okay, so
when it's all finished.
Yes.
Yeah. Sure. But if you're involved in your PTO and you decide to actually visit campuses and talk to your special area teachers, especially teachers like your art teacher who have so many perishable supplies that get used in the course of a year, and you say, what do you need? And if I were to say something like, I need a really big paper cutter, there are, anywhere between $500 and $1,000.
Wow.
And so what you do is you find one secondhand, or you go in with some other parents and maybe bring a bunch of markers to school for the teacher stuff like that. Like that kind of stuff, very helpful.
It goes a far way.
It does.
When you're at Target in July and August and you see the 50-cent packs of Target brand crayons.
Yes.
To buy like 10 bucks worth of those and donate them to the school. Put them in the hands of the art teacher in the school office. Make sure they go to that department. It's only 10 bucks out of an individual's pocket, but that can last literally
an entire quarter.
We can relate to that too. If Kill was in 7th and 8th grade, we would buy packs of stuff. They would ask, like, send letters home. Like that.
Sure.
Can you please help get this?
Right.
So students will have the stuff they need but to though, do but stuff. Those, but things. Those and are we, often we send stuff to Kayla with Kayla for
almost,
the classroom.
Almost anything that you get from a school saying, "Can you give us this?" is stuff that does not wind up going to specials. It winds up going to core classrooms.
Oh, wow.
Right. That's why I said specifically ask for the art teacher, have him or her come to the office, put it in their hands, make sure it goes into that room in that department.
And if your art teacher puts out a flyer saying, "We're going to have a family paint night, and it's $20 a ticket to go to do a big painting, and we'll give you all the materials to do it," grab everyone who you think might have a good time doing it and fill that room.
Yeah,
come in and buy tickets, paint your paintings, have a good time, and leave. And there's anywhere between $500, $700, $800 there for that teacher to use that year. That might wind up being his or her entire budget that year.
And you know what? You're paying $20 at a Color Me Mind to do that anyway.
Yes.
You know what I mean? That's a great idea for a fundraiser.
That's a great fundraiser. Just, you know, start off a school year too.
Yeah. It's a good date night for parents or whatever the case may be. And again, like you said, a couple $100 in the pocket goes a long way.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's practical. Some practical solutions there for folks, whether or not you have kids in a school or if you had kids in a school for a while, there are some simple things there that you can do. I know that when you send those notes home now, parents sometimes scoff at, like, "I got to buy you crayons and markers and, you know, doesn't the school have all this stuff?" Well, the simple answer is no. They really don't. Not anymore. So.
And plus, I said, too, some families, you know, especially in some of the different Phoenix demographic markets here, they're trying to make their own ends meet, too. I mean, that's two incomes or it's, do you know what I mean? Like having both parents working to make ends meet, or sometimes it's even single parents trying to make ends meet with what they forget. I hear stories about where there's high school students that are helping providing income for the household to make sure that they can make ends meet.
Well, think about this for a second. The reason I am here right now is because of the relationship I have with you. You are a local business that has taken it upon himself to support our public schools. You've provided me with certain things that were gratis and other things that I highly discounted thing just for teachers in my situation.
That's something.
And I've taken a poster to my room, and there's nothing wrong with that. I can put up that poster. This is a local business that's helping us. And look what we have. No other class are you going to come in and find 200 comic books sitting on the table that you can cut up, read, use for collage. It's all here. And you can thank this guy and his business. Why don't you go over there and take a look at what they have? And I've got no problem with that at all. That's not a political thing. That's a community thing.
Yeah,
if you don't have a community, you've got jack, especially in the public school.
That's like I said, it comes from my background. I come from a family of teachers and educators, and that was always something that's been around me. My aunt was an English teacher. Do you know what I mean? My Aunt Debbie and my dad, once again, was a high school counselor. He worked with students every day to make sure that he finds ways to make them succeed. I mean, it's just, to me, the future is youth. I mean, we're all going to only be here for a certain amount of time. Who's taking up the baton once we're moved on?
Sure.
You know, we're only here for a certain amount, 80 to 100 years if we're lucky. But this earth's been here 7 billion years. Do you know what I mean? Humans have been here for like about over 3 million years too. Our ancestors are going to keep on going. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, we're going to keep on giving to our next ancestors. But, you know, I really do feel like that. You got to look outside of yourself.
Are you saying that you believe the children are the future? We need to lead them well?
I believe that's a good idea.
Let them lead the way?
Yes. And I said too, it's like there's a lot of people that it's like that. I think the older you get detached from how important the youth is because you can't relate to them anymore. Sure. And I think there's a lot of fear of youth because they feel they don't know anything. Such a responsibility to educate them of what are things to make this world a better place for not only them, but their next generation.
Sorry about my horrible joke, but just a reminder to our listeners, this is Drawn to Politics. Sorry.
it's passion for your community. Yeah. And comics, yes, we have a community of comic shop here. But if you look at superheroes, every single superhero I've ever read about, what are they trying to do? Make their society a better place.
Sure.
The heroes.
You know, if we want to tie this all full circle, what we read about every day is superheroes wanting to make their community a better place by putting on a costume and a mask and going out there and making sure their city does not become corrupt or downtrodden. I mean, look at the whole Matt Murdock's a blind lawyer. Do you know what I mean? Okay. He goes out and fights crime with billy clubs, blind as a bat. In fact, he should be the true Batman. Mm. But then during the daytime, he's still fighting to make his society a better place. And he lives in Hell's Kitchen.
Right.
So they've got a place called Hell's Freaking Kitchen. That's not pretty much the best place to move into zip code when it comes to crime. Things like, see, I'm going to go look at where do I want to move because I want to be in a low crime area. Hell's Kitchen's down at the bottom of the list. Yeah. But Matt Murdock takes his pro gratis and doesn't have to worry about being the million-dollar attorney living up in, you know, on Boardwalk in New York. He's living in Hell's Kitchen trying to make it a better place.
Well, let's take it a step further, too. You're a comic book store owner. Other comic book store owners might listen to our podcast knowing what you're all about. And the fact that you have these awards and nominations on your window outside is no coincidence to the fact that you contribute to local schools and offer materials and comics and stuff. So if you're a comic book shop owner and you're like, man, I'm never going to move all of these issues of Alpha Flight, you donate them to the local school.
Or just drop them off my house. I love Alpha Flight.
And West Coast Avengers.
What am I going to do with all of this Justice League Europe? You take it. You take it to the local school. It means nothing to you. It means a world to them because they can cut it up, collage, all, like all the stuff he said. There's a lot of value to that. And that's how you get your shop on the map. Those kids tell their parents. They come to your shop for free comic book day because you're on their radar. They generate a little revenue for you, picking up a new book or two. And then before you know it, you're off to the races. They're coming to your shop to do magic tournaments and whatever else you want to do. And you're a part of the community then. That's how you get to a Drawn to Comics level of prestige. So.
Thank you, guys. I said, too, it's like I never thought about doing it for prestige or recognition either. It's just something, too, is like that. If you feel like you can help and do something, once again, I think I've been reading comics way too long. 8, 9 years old. It's like that. You want to answer the bat signal.
It never goes out of style to do right. You're doing what you feel is right, and everything turns your way. That's just the way.
And I've never felt absolutely horrible by doing something nice for somebody.
That's right.
Do you know what I mean? It's like sometimes going, man, you know what?
Depends on who that person.
Dude, yeah. I just helped that person cross the street. You know, so they didn't step in a puddle. It's like, man, I feel like crap. I want to go push them in the water. Now I feel better.
What the hell is this feeling? Whatever it is, I don't know what it is, but I want this to stop.
Exactly, dude.
Well, Andy, you're an art teacher. We talked about that. But you also grew up in Ohio. Am I understanding this right?
Yes, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio.
Something about Cleveland, Ohio that has influenced the comic book industry and culture from the beginning.
I mean, it's definitely Lake Erie. Yes.
Is it Lake Erie?
Yes, it's Lake Erie. How dirty it is, how many jokes have come about that it's so polluted that all our fish have AIDS. Yes, you've heard it all.
Jeez.
Wow.
That's
wow.
not true.
Okay, that's one of the statements.
No. Have you ever gone on YouTube and watched those Cleveland, hastily made Cleveland tourism videos?
Oh, no.
They're hilarious. They say things like, don't stop in East Cleveland or you'll die. Under construction since 1868. Come and look at both of our buildings. And then, you know, like, and that's Cleveland for you. And then it said at the very end, it says, it could be worse, though. At least we're not Detroit. We're not Detroit. And that's our new slogan.
Spiegel and Schuster. Were they from Cleveland?
Spiegel and Schuster. Yeah, they were. Spiegel and Schuster. Two Jewish boys made good. They took their idea from the story of Moses.
Yep.
Putting his children, his son, you know, putting Moses out on the raft and all that. That's the Superman story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Two parents getting rid of their kid before everything goes to hell. And he winds up looking like and passing for the people who take him in. And they treat him like one of theirs. And he grows up and winds up, you know, being a hero, I guess, in the biblical end of things.
Yeah, sure. So that's Mary and Joseph. Let's get a little bit closer there. Do you know what I mean? The MAs and the JOs right
now,
there.
Now, here's something you might not have learned. When I read the book about the history of Superman, one of the things I found really interesting was that there are two Hebrew words. There is Jurel and Kalel. Mm. Kalel means the voice of God, and wow. Jurel means the hand of God.
Oh.
So these two Jewish kids who wrote the story were absolutely using Torah, you know, Old Testament Hebrew
wow.
directly into their
A lot of people don't know Zod, General Zod, the spleen of God.
Well, would you say that's more Lucifer? You know,
so that's where God kept all of his pain was in his spleen. That's why Zod is so.
That's right. It's his appendix. But that's really interesting. So you grew up there. I've never been. So I got to ask right out of the gate, and I know we're going to talk about Harvey Picard and stuff in a second. So what is it about that town, you think, that kind of makes it this one of a few epicenters in the country? I mean, if comic book history had ley lines, certainly several of them would cross in Cleveland.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is there too.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there's a cultural significance to the town. What is it? I've never been there. What is it about the town? You're an artist.
I'll tell you this. I love Cleveland. I love the weather, except during the summer when it's all hot and humid and there's pheromone clouds worth of mosquitoes everywhere. Ooh. But aside from that, Cleveland is got lots of overcast days, lots of rain, and lots of cold and wind. And I happen to love it, but a lot of people find it's kind of like being in Russia. think about all of the amazing writers
and
playwrights who did their escapist writing in Russia, where alcohol was the only way to get away from everything else that was happening.
Interesting. Okay.
I'm going to say it again. I love Cleveland. It fits me like a glove, except for those summers. I really have a love for Cleveland, and people who live there understand what I'm talking about.
That's what I was going to say. Is like there's so much love for the city of Cleveland if you're from Cleveland.
Yeah.
I mean, see, the perfect example is like my wife's from Columbus.
Yeah.
And a little bit outside of Cleveland. I mean, Cleveland's like definitely your Phoenix, and like I would say Columbus is kind of like your Glendale. Mm-hmm. Would you say comparatively?
Except that. Cleveland's not the capital and Columbus is. So if you really think
a little bit of difference. Like, you can say Sacramento, San Francisco is a better comparison.
We're actually the largest quote suburb city, right? Okay. Then you've got Cincinnati, and everybody gets smaller and smaller as you go. Cleveland's big, and I guess there's always been a very artsy community out there, like ever since the beginning, like a very countercultural thing, like in the time of R. Crumb.
Yeah.
Even he said that area was like, you know, it was like a lot. I mean, he spent a lot of time in Cleveland.
Sure.
He hung out with Harvey Picard. That's how Harvey Picard got his start, was by Crumb looking at his little crummy little drawings and saying, wow, I really would like an opportunity to draw some of these stories. And you know, if you watch the movie American Splendor with Paul Giamatti, talk all about it.
Yeah,
that's really, you know, how it started.
Wow.
Right? He was Crumb himself, I guess, was attracted to that very slice of life, kind of matter of fact city that you know Cleveland is.
So the resident pride's like the unification is like what's just the amount of things you can relate to each other with in Cleveland, or because I said too, like the Browns fans are diehard.
Yes,
too, they like that are. The art community's diehard.
Yes.
Do you know, like Cleveland, I said too, the writers, you said too, there's so much. I said too, it's how would you say it? It's not mythical, but not romantic. The gothics, it's like a gothics type of city where do you know it's got cult, it's got like an artist mythos about it. It's culturally just legend. I won't say legendary, but
mythical. I would say so, because again, this is basically the birthplace of Superman, without whom we don't have any of this. So
I'll tell you this very quickly. Every time I come into the store, I feel like I'm stepping into Cleveland, because there are a lot of, if you will, artisanal standalone stores that I grew up going into in Cleveland that were old and smelled old, but people were very tenaciously and passionately doing things. I came the very first day I walked into this store and went up into this area. There were these people in here having some sort of knockdown drag out game at one of these tables. They were not yelling at each other, but they were playing with such fervor.
Yes. It was, we're gonna have a winner.
it did feel a lot like the same feeling that I get when I'm in Cleveland and I go into stores. Especially when I was a kid, and those things made a much bigger impression on me.
Yes. Sure.
And so I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say here, but I guess that's why it is that you guys who do this podcast and you who own the store, we're drawn to the things you're drawn to, and why it is that you are interested in this thing that I came from, because it's just real recognizes real. You guys.
Oh, sure.
Thank you. Yeah, I greatly appreciate that. It's that too. It was like passion is pretty much the bottom line. Cleveland has a lot of passion.
It's true.
And what they, you know, the people that live there, I mean, so too, it's like literally, I'm a huge sports fan too. And here, when the Cardinals suck, nobody wants to go to the games. The Cleveland Browns were 1-21 in the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. And they've been selling out since the 1940s,
it's right? Crazy, right?
Wow. And they're same with the Cleveland Indians. There's been up and down years.
The Indians have done better.
Yes. And but they've always had their fan base.
That's
the
true.
Cavaliers too. I mean, yeah. As I said too.
Well, the Cavaliers shot up a little bit there in the past few years also. I mean,
yes.
Yeah, it's about time for the Browns.
But they were
it's
but
about
they,
time for the Browns.
Yeah, they're close. As I said too, I really believe that as a sports fan too, the Browns are closer than they've ever been in many years. And but like the Cavaliers, like LeBron James, a guy that grew up in that area too.
Yep.
Was drafted. I don't know if that was just pure fate or the NBA was like, okay, we're going to make sure LeBron stays in that community to build up that community, because the Cavs were the only team that was really struggling in that sports arena, which is kind of interesting. So I think professional sports organizations respect Cleveland in that way, whether it's the NBA, so the NFL, Major League Baseball.
Yep.
They want to see Cleveland be successful because they know that passion and that pride in their city's there. And if that team's good, that's going to make them money too as well.
I hate saying
the capitalism side of that, but Cleveland is so proud of their community, which is great to see. They want to see it succeed, which is awesome. That's still one of those things because Detroit, they've given up on Detroit. It's sad to see such a major city get just kind of left for dead.
Sure.
Like Detroit. I mean, that is the home of the car.
Yeah,
and that city has been abandoned like it's just a bastard stepchild.
No man's land.
It's really sad to see that happen. But Cleveland, they want to make sure Cleveland succeeds. Do you know what I mean? And that's great to see that. And I think that's because the people in Cleveland never gave up on their own city. And that's kind of something that's really kind of fun to see about the people that have Cleveland.
I never even put those two things together.
I apologize. The Midwest people are so, I think, some of the most pure, down-to-earth people I've ever met.
Cleveland is a hard water town. There's no doubt about it. And everything that goes along with it.
That's true. And that's why I feel bad for Detroit, because Detroit is a major part of history to the United States.
You're right.
That they're just kind of like flushing down the toilet. And it's really sad to see. Like, hopefully,
we've not heard the last. They're having Detroit, a resurgence
good,
right now.
Because Detroit needs that in a bad way.
Mm-hmm. Because they have so much real estate that is just, at this point, not worth anything.
Oh, okay.
A lot of it is being gifted.
Wow.
I forgot what they're calling it. Urban refurbishment.
Mm-hmm.
Not just regentrifying, but a lot of like startups and businesses and warehousing and all that is taking up that space and putting it to use and making jobs.
Good. They need
that. Renovating old buildings or leveling ones that needed it and raising new ones.
Right.
Well, they didn't even care about the water. I was going, dude, you got to be freaking kidding me. You need to protect that city. I mean, when you're seeing the water show up as not a priority to get the lead cleaned up out of the community and the water is like, you got to be freaking unbelievable.
Well, this has been the most depressing.
Letting that city go.
This has been one of the hardest hitting, I think. I've not listened to the rest of you. I can only imagine that if your show is about comic books.
Yes.
We're talking about comic books here, folks.
Yes, I know, dude.
I can only imagine past episodes have been
crap.
Like.
Yes. A train wreck. I was here to see it go completely off the rails.
You missed our 12-part miniseries on the Holocaust. Right. That was the last one. We've been talking about the Holocaust.
Oh, my gosh.
And then,
that would have been a hoot.
Yes. Our last
Why wasn't I there for that?
Yes.
Our last episode, of course, we talked about we had 9/11 remembrances, followed by a review of the movie Venom.
And
so it was
future episodes. We're going to talk about the global warming. And
right, that's coming up.
How many years do we have left on this for our next generations? I'm planning 5.2 generations until we all turn into
interesting.
A ball of fire on this planet.
Gotcha. Right. In the meantime, though, of course, we got to talk about
Human
childhood,
Torch will be a great new mutant rotation.
Childhood obesity and childhood hunger together. We got to talk about both of those things.
Yes, dude. And then how to more or less survive. As a a child of the people that were in car crashes.
Oh yeah, that's
yes,
orphans.
I think that. Yes,
just orphans. The orphan episode.
Yes, Jason Todd episode. We're calling that one.
Wow.
So okay, you lived in Cleveland. Did you ever cross paths with any of these greats that were indigenous to the area?
Yes, I met Harvey Pekar twice. Wow.
Twice.
Yes, twice.
That's epic.
And that was pretty cool.
Who played you in the movie?
I wasn't in the movie. But no, I met him well before that movie came out. The first time I saw Harvey Pekar once, and I knew it was him because I was already reading his comic books. I saw him at like one of the food stores. I can't remember which one it was. I didn't say anything to him. He always looked like a guy who was perpetually in a pissed off mood. He had this screwed down expression pretty much on his face all the time. My apologies to Miss Brabner if she's listening, because she probably knew a much softer side of him, but he was sort of notorious around town as the man you just didn't talk to. Don't talk to me.
Right.
I don't know who you are. Am I obligated to talk to you because I'm somebody? Because you're not.
Wow.
Was pretty much he wasn't a snob. He just didn't seem to like people. So, at all.
I'm going to start adopting that mentality, I think. Hey, Russ, what's going on? Don't talk to me.
Did I address you first?
if you want to see a real picture of him, you should watch the interview that Johnny Carson did with him. It was actually in his kickoff issue, like his number one issue of American Splendor, was him on the show. Once again, the entire cartoon illustrated by what's his face? We're just talking about him. Illustrated by
Crumb.
And I remember walking into to Record Revolution, which is a great secondhand record store back when people used to buy records. Mm. And on the comic book rack were all the local comics, and one of them was American Splendor. And I picked the first one up off the rack and said, "This looks really weird and low quality. Like it looked like it was like just stapled together on newsprint paper." And I was just intrigued. And I went home and I read it and I was like, is this just about daily experiences that don't really necessarily have any, like, there's no necessarily beginning, middle, or end. They're just kind of a thing, like a vignette.
Right.
With, like, I've experienced a day like this. Why am I drawn to reading about it? Why is this so interesting?
And how old are you then?
Must have been 1983, 84. Wow. So I was born in 1971. Yeah. So,
okay.
I was like a young punk. You know, I was really into hardcore American punk. I thought I was very, very cool, and I'm sure that I was every bit as annoying as the students I teach today. Anyway, my point is that I read those comics and I immediately got interested, and then I realized I was holding on to something that was valuable. And so I immediately started putting them away, like getting bags and boards and putting them away. And when the first trade paperbacks came out, I bought them immediately. And I bought one that was a really big compendium. I was very excited. I read it a lot. And I was reading through it when my friend, who was a comic book dealer, started going to shows. And I went to a show and I helped him set up his table. And I'm looking around the room and here is Harvey Pekar sitting at a table with his books covering the table at this point, stacks of his books. And he looks miserable. Nobody's coming up to him. Nobody's buying any books. Of course not. No one wants to talk to him, I guess.
Right.
Was he like smoking a cigarette? Go,
no,
stay,
he wasn't.
Stay, dude, hey.
He wasn't smoking.
The thing is, though, if he's the kind of guy that you can't approach in a grocery store, why would you approach him at this show?
I had to.
Yeah, of course.
It wasn't a giant room. You could see everybody vending. I walked over. And I just said, "Mr. Pekar, I just wanted to tell you that it's an honor. I really like your work." And he goes, "Thank you." He just like put his hand out, like, okay, I've already heard enough. Just thanks. He was just kind of like that. And I was like, okay.
And this is why nobody's here. This is why nobody's talking.
And I just said, "I was wondering if I could trouble you for an autograph." And he goes, "No, you can't. I'm not giving autographs."
Why was he there? Was he just like paid to be there? Obviously.
No, he wanted to sell his comic books. He said he'd been schlepping these things around and hadn't sold them in, like, no one was buying the comics, and he was discounting them, and he just wanted to sell them, I guess. I said, "Can I please have an autograph?" And he goes, "No, I don't give away autographs. I'm not doing it today," I think is what he said. He didn't say he doesn't do it. And he said, "You know, I'm selling comic books here. Would you like to buy a book?" Wow. And I'm looking through and I was like, I saw several issues I didn't have. And I said, I'd love to, but I'm not here to buy books. I'm here to sell. I don't have any money. I was picked up by my friend and I'm just doing this. He goes, "He's not paying you?" And I said, "No." And he goes, "And you're telling me that you don't have any money on you at all?" And I said, "That's right. I don't have any money." And he goes, "Well, if you bought a comic, I would sign it. But I guess there's nothing more for us to discuss. Why don't you go back and
So, can you imagine today?
Can you imagine that today?
With, in the culture of the Comic-Con and the age of the internet, if somebody had an exchange like that with a creator, that guy would have to go, or girl would have to go on Twitter immediately the next day and apologize.
Yeah.
I did say to him that I had a trade paperback. Now, here's what's weird. There are comics in his back catalog, stories that are very much like this one.
Sure.
Like that other people have had interactions with him at comic book. And I said, I've got this trade paperback. And he goes, don't buy those things, damn it. And I said, why not? He goes, I sold the rights to that once. And I got paid once. Right. And now I have watched my sales plummet because people are going to buy this instead. Don't buy those. I've already made my money off of that. You need to buy my books.
Buy the individual comics as they come out.
And I thought to myself, well, you made money off of the sale. I mean, you had to have made something. It must have been worth your while at one point.
Sure.
But, of course, I'm not going to try logic with this guy.
Not only that, but at the time, honestly, these guys had no idea.
Yeah, probably got railroaded. Yeah,
everyone from Picard to Jack Kirby. And, you know, I mean, the stories.
Yes, he did go to this.
I mean, the stories go on and on of these guys that created great, amazing things that made a lot of other people money. They had no lawyers. They had no representation.
Yeah.
They had no idea.
Yeah.
At the same time, if he had signed... It's an interesting thing because if he'd given you that autograph, one, do you really have an interesting story? You know what I mean? So he almost gave you a gift greater than the autograph because now you get to kind of tell this really interesting.
But I did get the autograph. That was the best part.
Oh, okay.
So what happened was I'm sitting there at my thing and people are buying our books. They're all new books. They're all high-end books. People are buying and they're flying off the racks. And we're just like, they're coming down. And we're putting more up, and the piles are going down.
Wow.
We picked up a second table for free because a vendor didn't show up. They just gave it to us.
Oh, that's great.
So we put the very new books there, and he had them, and the guy I was working with had the higher and the older books that were the collector books. And we just we sold quite a bit that day, and we're watching him, and he's watching us. And nothing's really happening on his end. And finally, I just had to get up and stretch my legs, and I walked around, and I chewing a piece of gum, and I walked by, and I just walked by, and he's not looking at me. He's reading something, or I don't remember what he was doing. But as I walked by, he said, hey, what kind of gum are you chewing? And I said, Juicy Fruit. and he said, do you have another stick of that? And I said, yeah, I do. And I walked over, and I handed him a stick of gum, and he went like this. He goes, thanks.
Okay.
Puts it in his mouth, goes right back to what he's doing. And I'm just like,
this guy.
So many words went through my head. I started to walk away. I walked away. And I think that he kind of was chuckling. Like he was trying to punk me a little bit.
Yeah.
And I went back to my table. And finally, somebody came to his table like that was working with him. And they had some kind of exchange. Like the guy was supposed to be there. And he's been sitting there waiting for him. Finally, he gets up and he goes to the restroom. Picard, he comes back in. And he walks by our table. And he goes like this. He says, I got something for you. And he holds his hand out and he drops the wrapper to the... to the gum.
Wow.
and I open it up, and in a ballpoint pen he had written, thanks for the gum, comma, Harf.
Nice.
And I took that and I glued it into my trade paperback. I thought that's where it needed to go after that conversation. Yes. That's where it needed to go. Not on the book. Needed to go in the trade.
Yeah.
And that's my pride and joy. It's one of my favorite things in my collection.
That's an awesome story.
Gosh, that's amazing, man.
It's just like even to the point of like that, boom, it's crumpled up.
Right.
you open up and
it was
discovered.
More, it was more, it was more, it was more folded. Like he
okay,
didn't,
folded, okay.
I mean, obviously, if he had just thrown the crumpled up, I probably would have thought, he probably would have realized I thought it was garbage and tossed it. But instead,
folded it.
It was kind of folded and he just put it on the table.
I wonder, that was never anything he retold in a comic book?
No, but he did tell it. I think the reason he didn't was because he told a very similar story about a guy who had a trade paperback, and he said, "Don't buy those.
Don't buy those." Yeah.
So because of that, he probably decided this was too much of a retweet.
Sure. Yeah.
And
sure.
Decided not to do it. But
wow.
But it was funny because after it was over, I before he left, I just said, "You know, this is the kind of thing that you write about. Like this could be one of your little vignettes." And he said, "Son, if I had a dollar for every time somebody told me that that they thought the interaction they had with me was so freaking important that I should have written about it in their comic book, I wouldn't be sitting here selling these things. I'd already be rich.
Wow. Jeez.
Oh my God! That's
super blunt.
So
how big was the stick that was stuck up his?
About as big as a Juicy Fruit.
Yeah, exactly.
I got to admit, I really, wow. Because of what I've heard about him, I really do treasure that. I mean, that's so awesome that I have that, because I guess a lot of people don't have his signatures. He sold them.
Yeah.
Sometimes he would sell them for exorbitant amounts.
Sure.
But dude, I don't know how many people he just gave them to. I mean, I had to work for it.
Yeah, right.
But it was a gift. He decided that I was worth to do it, worthy of it.
I can just imagine the Twitter war between him and Trump.
Nah.
At each other.
I don't know, man. Based on the way he talked, I think that he may have had some common ground with Trump,
Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. Wow. Yeah. I don't even have to put words to it, dude. Just like kind of like that, hey, dude, it's my way or the highway. And I don't care what you think. Attitude.
Well, what's genuinely cool about that story is that is a guy with such a definitive, unapologetic approach and personality. And unfortunately, of course, it's a comic book podcast, so it's got to skew toward the pessimistic. But like, unfortunately, you don't get a lot of stories like that anymore. You go to a Comic-Con, you meet a guy like, maybe you'll meet Jeff Loeb, or you'll meet Jim Lee, or you'll meet, I don't know, Jeff Johns or Scott Snyder. These guys will happily sign a comic book for you, maybe even take a selfie with you. And that's awesome. That's amazing. But to retell it is, But you tell a story like that, and it's such a minuscule moment that you're able to pull these epic thoughts and concepts out of, because the man was that. So it's so cool.
So anyway, he wrote about a storefront called Abood's Foods, which is in downtown Cleveland. It was a black sort of Art Deco looking storefront with these interesting big black bulk letters that said Abood's Foods. It was a little convenience store owned by this this Middle Eastern guy, and he was right near where Harvey worked. So he would go in there a lot to buy a lot of his groceries. Even though you pay too much there, it was convenient. And he had
that was his place.
So my dad's a doctor at the Cleveland Clinic at the time. And I'm in his office and I look out the window and I see the Abood's Foods there. And I was like, it's right out of a comic book. Yes. And I went in there. The first couple of times I went in there, I was maybe in the back of my mind thinking I might see him, but I never did. But one time I walked in there and he was there.
Oh, wow.
And he was in line and he was arguing with somebody about returning something that he'd already opened and didn't want. Like it was the wrong thing or didn't.
This cereal tastes like crap.
he wanted a refund for something that was, as I recall, as I almost remember this, it seemed like it was like $4. And he was really, trying to get this money back. Anyway.
So classic.
When he was out of line, I was kind of standing and watching. And when he got out of line, I said, "Mr. Picar," and he looks at me, and he goes, and I said, "I'm Andy Tucker," and he goes, "Okay, okay,
yeah,"
and I said, "I'm sure you don't remember me," and he goes, "You're right."
Wow. Yes. Dude.
And I said, several years ago, I was at a comic book convention or a comic book sales day. And you were there selling books, and I asked you for your autograph, and he goes, "Okay," and I said, "Anyway, I just wanted to say hi," and he goes, "Hi," and I said, "You wound up giving me a signature," and he goes, "Really?" And I said, "Yeah," and then he said, he just looked at me and he said, "Juicy Fruit."
Wow.
He didn't smile. Yeah. There was no warmth in it. Yes. He just acknowledged. He said, "Juicy Fruit," just like that. I said, "That's right. You gave me a Juicy Fruit pack back, and you wrote your name on it." And he goes, "Good for you." And he said that must have been a good day for you. And I said, "Yeah, it was a really good day, and I just wanted to say thanks." And he was like, "You're welcome." And he just picked up his stuff and he started to walk out the door. And that was the first and last time I ever heard
Picard. Wow. Now, I wonder if there's like any emotional detachment from just being able to interact with other people. He just gets socially awkward.
He did not like people. He did not like having to go where people were. Mm-hmm. And he did not like directly talking to people, especially people he didn't really know.
It's almost like an anxiety he may have in his own way, too.
Well, I think that was his charm. He was, I mean, I've always thought of him as almost the Woody Allen of comics.
Yes.
I mean, not so much in...
Maybe not quite that neurotic, and probably a little more balls on him. Yeah,
not in behavior, but in persona. You see somebody that's kind of this savant, and we treasure how down to earth that storytelling is, and it becomes bigger than it really is as a result of these stories that are attached to the guy. I mean, to me, it's there are a few creators like that nowadays. You know what I mean? There's nobody that can. You can meet Bendis at a con, have a 20-minute conversation with him, and have no story to tell afterward.
Yes.
You have two brief encounters with Harvey Pekar. And it's like
lifetime memories.
Yeah. Yes. I love it.
I thought it was so surreal watching that movie, because it was all about Cleveland first, before it was about him.
Mm.
Wow.
And there were so many brilliant lines that I'd seen in his comic books. They literally took panels and just brought them to life on the screen, which is always a great thing to do.
Yeah.
And one of my favorites is him looking in the mirror and just looking in the mirror, and there's this thought bubble over his head that says, "There's a reliable disappointment." So he was every bit as hard on himself as he was on anyone and everyone else, I think.
His own worst critic.
Yeah.
Wow.
If he was warmer with his fans, if he was more confident in his work, would it have stood the test of time? So I think
it's the fact that he was so he did not sugarcoat a thing.
Right.
You know, in his books he talks about pulling it because he's depressed and lonely.
Right.
And does panels describing it, like showing him from here up, like his cum face and things like that, like all these things. It's like, this is what this guy does. He's not afraid to be exactly what he is in warts and all.
Yeah.
This is like that, hey, you're getting the genuine article. There's no acetate, no sugarcoat.
And nowadays, man, we live in a culture where it's 24/7 sugar. Everything's saccharine.
Well, everything's like, as I said too,
everything is perfectly chromed and perfectly coiffed. And
right.
I mean, it's hard. I mean, I feel that as a business owner, because like there's so many people that will just with all due respect to social media and the internet, it's like connecting people, man, do people use that as their blind hate? It's like, you're not going to find who I am, but I can say whoever, whatever I want. That's going to make other people more or less talk about cyberbullying.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, social media is the number one source, I would say, of cyberbullying.
It's more than that too, though. If you have a bad day, Ken, which it seems like you don't often betray, but let's say you were wearing that emotion on your sleeve one day, which you're completely entitled to do, and a customer walks in and asks some question that you just have... You know, you're fed up with answering, you know, like, hey, you guys got any Deadpool stuff, you know, and you're like, take a look around. Do we have any Deadpool stuff? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like the fact that if you had an abrasive encounter with that first time customer and then he tweets it. Now you got to spend days, weeks, months recovering from that freaking Yelp review or whatever it is. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And
I guess
there's no Picard. Wiggle room anymore, you know?
That's true.
Yeah, that's one thing. I guess I'm kind of lucky that I've got a personality that's very tolerable of people. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Of like that, where it's my thought when he said that is like, do you have any Deadpool comics? Yeah, let me show you.
Right. you can't even immerse yourself in my hypothetical.
It's weird. It's sad because I kind of wish I could at times because I do have bad days like that.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of thinking to myself, it's like that. I don't know how. Maybe it's just how people are wired brain-wise, like left brain, right brain. I don't even know how to explain it because I'm not like a psychologist anyway. But there's certain people that have this position of like that I cannot stand stupid people.
No, it's the same for you. You're a teacher. You got to stand in front of a big group of kids every day, all day.
Yeah.
And if you're having a bad day, that's going to affect – it's only going to get worse.
Except for one thing, and that is that this is something that Ken and I think are very much the same on, is that – as bad a day as Ken might be having in his personal life,
yes.
The low light of the day is not being here at the store.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that he loves, that he's passionate about, and this is the therapy.
Yeah.
This is the occupational therapy. This is where you can drop that shit at the door. Pardon me. I don't know how you'd monetize these videos with bad language or not. You drop that at the door.
You already said cum face.
So. You can edit that out.
No, it's all in. It's all good.
You know, PG-13. It's true because yes. that's what people see is they see somebody who genuinely cares about what he's doing, loves marrying the person to the thing that they want. We had that moment with that Voltron figure.
Yes.
That was
that a was, high five there for people
was
not
so
watching it.
Great.
I think that's a new record. We've gone 59 minutes before the first high five. I think that's a new record.
High five is my wife. High five ghost, favorite character on my show.
So right. Do you think Harvey ever had that? You think writing and making those comics for him was the joy?
Happy area?
Yeah.
And then I selling really them was just the necessary evil, I
you
guess?
Know, the feeling, the way he felt about the way he looked in the mirror and the being that low at his life, that the only thing he could think to do was gratify himself physically to get out of his, mm-hmm. and it made it worse.
Yeah.
The therapy of writing about it and putting it out was his joy.
Mm.
That's clear to me. I don't know what else was his joy. I know that he got a lot of joy out of his relationship with his wife.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
You know, and he got a lot of joy when he found out that his cancer was in remission.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
You know, that's
like a new hope.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, like those kind of things. He got a lot of joy. He got a lot of joy on the day that R. Crumb said, I'd very much like to draw a bunch of these. Can I just take these and start drawing them?
Yeah.
And I know he did. I'm sure he did.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what I would feel. But the guy really had the heart of a poet.
Mm.
If you watch that movie or you read his books, so many of his stories begin with these really like thoughtful lines, like a short weekend begins with longing.
Mm. Mm.
Right.
Yeah.
Talking about being alone, working in dingy downtown Cleveland, hating his job, hating his life, not making enough money, getting left by his first wife. And those are the words that come out of his mouth. These beautiful, beautiful words out of all this fertilizer.
Yeah.
He was a poet.
Mm.
And he must have been a very, very delicate soul inside.
Sure.
He must have been. That's why he was so diamond hard on the outside, I guess.
And would you say that he was probably one of the first that brought that pose and poetry into comics? I mean, comics were generally at that time superhero stories. The Westerns weren't as popular anymore. There was horror in the 70s. But as far as something that had a strong literary merit, people usually ascribe that to Stan Lee because he was verbose and knew how to use alliteration and stuff like that. But as far as like, and you know, Stan Lee could paraphrase or spin a good Shakespearean verse, you know what I mean? But as far as bringing something that was a little more metropolitan, a little more contemporary, would you say Picard was a revolutionary in that way?
And yet not just contemporary, but also hearkening back, in my opinion, to like, to almost like Renaissance poetry, like very emotional, at least under the surface, and incredibly poignant turns of phrase or a beautiful resolution to a small story. Like these things are almost like seminal writing moments. Like someday, if they aren't already, somebody will study those books for some sort of a thesis or some sort of a literary understanding. He really had it.
Yeah.
He was a lot smarter than he let out that he was. And, I would have loved to have, loved to have been let in, but I'm sure that he would have hated me because I would have been such a sycophant, you know, if he had been like that. He probably could sense it on me.
Sure.
And just had a whole bunch of hands in front of him because, just come on, guy.
Right.
Just be a man and stop acting like a woman is what he probably would say to me back in the day. Nowadays, you wouldn't say that, but he sure as hell would have.
Sure, sure, sure.
Wow.
Yeah, I wonder if that sensitivity comes from that sycophantic nature he found around him. If you had been like, oh, Picard, yeah, I know you. I know your work. And you're almost dismissive about it, despite yourself, if that would have been a more, you know, bridge, if that would have built a bridge. Who knows?
I don't know. But it certainly would have facilitated his quick exit from the conversation, which is probably all he was thinking.
All he wanted.
I'm done.
Well, I'm twice as done as you, pal. See ya.
Well, I'm going to call this Juicy Fruit, a Harvey Picard story, man. I think it's pretty cool, man.
Yes.
And Andy, thanks for sharing it with us on this podcast. My pleasure. A lot of folks listening will get some joy out of that alone. You know, sure. Just kind of fans of his and fans of comics and creators that, you know, dream of meeting some of these people responsible for the books they love and the stories they read and stuff like that.
If I could leave the listeners with any thoughts, they would be, please go and help out your special area teachers. Come and see what you can provide for them, what you can throw in for them. If you know people who are carpenters that can come in and put up shelves or whatever, ask the teachers what they need and help them out, because they're there for your kids. And if you're interested now in Harvey Picard, don't buy trade paperbacks. Contact the American Splendor Press. I forgot the name of the. I had this contact information. I forgot it now. I think that they're still. They still have all the royalties, the family.
So his estate,
yeah.
You could still buy the books directly from them.
I'm not sure how that works, but there is a way to get money to the family. And you know, if you want to support at the source, that's what you should do.
That's very cool.
Keep the money in Cleveland.
Yes.
God knows they need it.
You know, real quick, while we're talking about creators like that, and you've mentioned supporting the estate, I kind of want to just give a shout out to Norm Breyfogle's family. You know, Norm Breyfogle.
Yes.
Passed away as we're recording this now, probably a week or so ago.
At least.
Yeah. So what's interesting is I've visited his website for a long time, and he was a poet himself. He wrote some free verse poetry and, of course, prolific artist, Batman Beyond, a lot of creator owned stuff like Metaphysique, Of Bitter Souls. Did I mention Archie? Worked on Archie for a while. So quite prolific, despite his style being so characteristic of him.
He had a lot of range.
And I've been a fan of his website for a long time. Really wasn't active on it around 2012. And then, of course, he had, I believe, the heart attack that kind of paralyzed him and his drawing side. So he wasn't active on the website. So shortly after he passed, I went on the website to read some of those poems, and I bought one of his personal sketchbooks. Wow. After I bought it, though, it's a $55 purchase. So, you know, a little chunk of change. But I thought, hey, if this goes toward his family and they see that he still has fans out here that are, like, actively visiting the website and stuff, that'd be great. I noticed that the email that I my purchase went to was nbrayfogle at something that I'm like, well, is anybody checking this email address again? Will I ever actually get this book? So I'm a fan of his. I wrote a note on the memorial page where his services were. Wrote something about him on Facebook. Big fan, but I'm wondering if I just threw some money into an abyss. So in this case, if you could find the American Splendor, the actual estate, the press, I'm sure it's not hard to find online. Just a simple Google. And that money's going into his loved one's pocket, so that's a really good thing.
And you can buy reprints of almost all of the first two series of his comics.
Oh,
if you can't find the originals, you can certainly buy the reprints. I got some from you. Remember when your reprints came through? I bought a bunch of them, right?
Yep.
Because I already own a lot of those. I don't want to touch them. They're in bags and boards.
Yeah. What's the value of some of those originals?
I have no idea. His movie went up. I'm sure those were something.
Right.
That's because they need to start more of an underground comic book price guide. And I hear it's out there, but they're extremely hard to find. Mm-hmm. Like, because I was trying to do some research, like, how do I find prices for some of the values of these books? And it's like supposedly that on the internet, there's supposed to be an underground price guide that you can subscribe
to.
Well, if you start going online and look at what they're going for.
Yeah,
and you usually and the rule would be to go for the lower third of whatever you're seeing them for, because you'll see astronomical numbers and you'll see some crazy low numbers that are not right.
Yeah,
much better to go with that bottom third the bottom third.
Even. Wow,
that's usually the right price, unless you're looking for something. And once again, it's hard to quantify. Picard's books, maybe it's the top third, but as a rule, if you're trying to find out what a book you can't get a listing on is, you go for the bottom third of what you're finding.
Interesting. Wow. You're saying if it's listed at 30, 20, 10, basically assume it's going to be about 15.
That's basically
what you're saying.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, cool. Well, Ken, anything to plug? We got Halloween Fest coming up here at Drawn to Comics.
Yes, we're teaming up with the Velmatique Library.
That's the Glendale Public Library branch across the street from you here.
Yes, it's like that. We'll be doing, you know, artists such as yourself, Russ Kazmierczak.
I'll be here.
It will be awesome to see.
His books are great too, by the way. They are great. They're hilarious and they're full of the same kind of local humor that Harvey Pekar would have been proud of.
Oh, wow. He would never admit it, I guess. But that's high praise, actually. Thank you very much.
I could see Harvey Pekar like, yeah, he does good stuff.
He does stuff.
He'd probably say Kazmierczak's stuff is a little too bright and a little too action packed. But if you go for that sort of thing.
So yeah, that's happening Saturday. What is it?
October 27th.
27th.
Let's do it.
It'll 5 to 8 p.m.
Yep, 5 to 8 p.m. Right over at the library, and here too, we'll be handing out comics both places. And it's kind of like trick or treat for comic fans. And then I'm gonna have I think 11 artists we're putting in there this year.
Yeah.
And every single one of them asking to bring a bowl of candy. So trick or treat at the artist tables, I think, will be a fun way.
Very cool.
Of, you know, sharing your art with fans. And then what draws people better than candy besides art?
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
And parents.
And so it's like
parents,
peanut butter jelly.
Yeah.
Parents, if you want an inroad to your school, find out what schools are doing trunk or treat. That's where teachers spend their own hard-earned money again to buy big bags of candy from the food stores, and then they open up the back of their car and they just pass out candy to students who want a safe environment to pick up their candy, walking around parking lot, just getting a little bit from each teacher instead of going to houses.
There's actually going to be a trunk or treat event outside of our store this weekend.
Nice.
Like this weekend or that weekend at the Halloween Fest? This coming weekend.
Yeah, Blue Ribbon Army asked if they could come back, and they did it last year with us.
Oh, cool.
So it was a lot of fun. And they just had, like, you know, they opened up their trunk, they decorated them, and then, like, their families came and just kind of hung out together, hung out through the store. And
so seed your candy bag early.
Which was really good, yeah.
Start your candy bag early next week.
The trunk or treats are awesome. I know they do them in school parking lots. Yep. They do them in some local businesses like ours this coming up weekend.
And
it's a great community way that's safe and fun for your family to dress up and get some candy if they need to get candy and just have a good time with fans of similar interests.
Very cool. Well, I'm going to be at that Halloween Fest here at Drawn to Comics on the 27th. Then on the 28th, I'm going to be at the Phoenix Zine Fest.
Nice.
In downtown Phoenix at the Unexpected Art Gallery.
Okay.
That's all day there. I think it's actually 11 to 7. So people that self-publish comics, zines, fanzines, that's happening there. I'll be set up there for, I think, the third year in a row. It's a great little show, and it's niche, obviously, people that are into self-published stuff like that, but it's a lot of fun. DJ's great, food, trucks, music, drink. So yeah, everybody in the Phoenix area, if you're interested in that, come on out and pick up some zines. So that'll be fun.
Awesome.
I think that'll do it for this episode of the Drawn to Comics podcast.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Andy, thanks for being here, man.
Yeah,
this was great.
Yeah,
we'll have to do it again. Go meet another curmudgeon.
I gotta find something else to talk about.
we'll take him to a Comic-Con and say, okay, who's the guy that's going to be the most butterfaced towards us? Right?
Point him towards Steranko. Steranko, go.
Yeah, who is the most masculine looking Sailor Moon? Let's have that.
Until next time, I'm Russ.
I'm Ken.
And we are Drawn to Comics. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you very much.
I felt so cool, man. That was great. Was so much fun.
I did not understand the word. What you guys were referring to.
What's that?
I can't. That was a word I haven't heard before.
Curmudgeon?
No, curmudgeon I've heard.
Okay.
Oh, shoot, dude. When you were describing why he wouldn't be able to hang around with each other. He wasn't like that. He said you would be like that. You'd annoy him because of...
Oh, I'd be too much of a sycophant.
What is that?
That means somebody who's so starstruck by the person that they're always like, oh my gosh, man, you're freaking awesome.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, I'm so happy to have met you. Can I hang out in your office?